I'm John Hanson. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I've been doing a little thread here of the craziest lawsuits you've ever heard of. Not to put you on the spot, Mr. Camden, but you want to play our game here today?
We're having a guess. We'll take a guess.
Yeah, we'll take a guess. All right. This one goes back a couple years. You may have heard about it. 2017. We've all had dates gone wrong in our... Well, not you, Kevin. I know every day you've ever been on long ago was successful, of course. A true gentleman you are. This guy, who's 37 years old in Austin, Texas, he sued his date. He took her to the movies and sued her because she did what the whole time during the movie? Any guesses? He was upset. He feels like she didn't enjoy the experience because she was doing something the entire time during the movie.
I'll go with played Candy Crush.
Well, you're really close. She was texting on her phone during the two movies. He was so offended. They had gone to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which I think was a big one for people that like that stuff. He claimed her behavior was breaking theater rules and was affecting his movie watching experience. So she agreed to pay him $17.31 for the cinema ticket if he left her alone. He then withdrew the lawsuit. Don't think that one had a good chance anyways, Kevin.
You can always find a willing lawsuit and a willing lawyer, right?
Well, that's what I'm finding with some of these cases. There's crazy ones that are even overseas. I'll have to share some of those where people actually won that I couldn't believe it. We'll get to some more of those later on. Kevin, always good to see you, my friend.
Nice to be back.
From Camden Law, we're talking about wills and trusts and everyone preparing for all of that important stuff. Forbes published a study recently. I don't know whether this surprises me or not, probably not you, that about half of the people over the age of 55 have not yet created a will. Number one, does that surprise you? And number two, boy, that's a problem.
It doesn't surprise me. It would probably be more accurate if it said people over the age of 55 have not either put a will or an estate plan together or revised it recently. Mm-hmm. And I think that number would probably, in my experience, be closer to 80%. And what was the second question?
Oh, wait. Sorry. 80% of people have not made one or revised one recently.
We have folks that come in on a routine basis. We love to see them, and they'll tell us. It's been, 20, 25 years since we started having kids. And while we love them, we're not so concerned that they get everything now. We want it to go to the grandkids, so we need to update things. Knowing what we know about human nature and society now, in 25 years, some people have a second or a third or maybe even more marriages. Yeah. So we need to address those concerns. It's the update that's as much of a concern for us as it is having it in place altogether.
Yeah, because life changes and those things that are in place, I mean, they're legally binding. If you made them 25 years ago, it still sticks, yeah? There can't be too many arguments after the fact of, well, life has changed.
They are, and it's comical to a degree, but I had a conversation with a fellow the other day, and he kind of scratched his head and said, well, my kids are in their late 20s now, and I'm not sure they want to go live with my sister Susie if my wife and I pass away. Now, of course, that wouldn't happen because they were of majority, but the point
is,
there's updating that needs to be done, and without getting too deep into the weeds, there are tax concerns you have to be cognizant of as well, because if the estate tax changes, you may need to do some other things. We're in a good position presently with state and federal, although we've heard some discussion about maybe federal estate tax changing. Haven't seen any legislation proposed yet to that effect.
Let me just pause for a second. When you say if the laws change, that's a good time to revisit things too, because you want to maximize whatever you can or make sure that you're in compliance with whatever has changed.
Absolutely. So presently in the state of Illinois, the estate tax is $4 million or higher. So if you pass away and have a net worth greater than that, you may get hit with a significant estate tax. And, I'd rather give money to family, friends, fraternal organizations yes. than give it to the government when I pass away. Yeah. So that's a concern there as well.
Boy, I just want to reiterate to that to people, because I think that some people may even think that they're covered. Maybe every life change, they do something, but I didn't even think about legislation changing. And even if you don't know, right, that's got to be something you don't want to Google, go down that rabbit hole. Talk to you guys. You guys are going to know the details, right?
We do. We try and stay on top of everything that's happening with both the estate tax number and then novel ways to minimize estate taxes. There are ways you can do it that are inexpensive that make sure the government gets less and less and your heirs and the folks that you're concerned about get right. The bulk of your estate.
And there's no shame in doing it because you're doing it through the legal channels that are provided by the government. I know some people like kind of go, well, that seems shady, but hey, it's not. I mean, you are following the laws that are written and it can benefit a lot of organizations you mentioned. There's ways to make sure that it's spread out the right way.
Financial planner that I work with very closely with Guardian Assist often says grieving is tough, and we understand that, of course, but our focus is for the people that are left behind. What are we doing for the spouses, for the kids, for the grandkids? It makes things very fundamental things like, what do you wish for a funeral service? We can get that specific in estate planning documents. Too, of course, what's going to happen with homes and bank accounts and these sorts of things. It makes it a lot easier for who's left rather than just kind of guessing.
Yeah. In the study published by Forbes as well, they said only 18% of people in the age range that we mentioned, over 55, have all of the recommended legacy plan essentials. A will, they say, a health care directive, and durable power of attorney. I know what a will is. What are the other two things that they're mentioning there in that Forbes study? What's a healthcare directive?
Healthcare directive, it kind of goes hand in glove with a power of attorney for health care. It allows somebody to act as your surrogate to make decisions on your behalf. Presumably, you've had discussions with those people, and they know exactly what end-of-life measures you choose or would not choose so that you don't wind up in a circumstance where you're being left on life support when you didn't choose that choice. And the reality is, and we've talked about this since COVID kind of sunk in last year, It's COVID now that's a concern. Hopefully, in 6 months,
a year or
2 years, we'll be on to something else.
Please.
But we hear a lot of folks that are very concerned about, COVID. Well, 2 years from now, we may be back to, heart disease or cancer, whatever the case is. So, we joke, and it's morbid humor, but it's true. Nobody gets out of it alive. So rather than leave a mess, frankly, for your children, let's do some planning so that everything is in a row, all the ducks in a row, to use a cliche. And the reality is, my folks who I know, God love them, are listening, are at the tip of that baby boom age. They're both of them will be 75 this summer. They're starting to pass away at a lot higher percentage. So we want to make sure things are put together. It's very, very difficult for me personally when we have clients that come in, and typically they're adult children, who will say, Mom and Dad had a ton of money. Dad passed away years ago. Mom doesn't suffer for money, but we never did any of these things. Powers of attorney, let's assume the parent is still alive. And we have to put Mom in a state home when we know we could afford a private home, but we can't really get access to the money. Now, we can fix that. We'll go through a procedure, but it'll take a few bucks and time. And the reality is nobody wants to see anybody linger in a home that they would rather choose not to be in and maybe provide for a higher level of care, but it just takes time to get that done. Whereas if we sit and talk now, put everything in place, if Mom, and again, I mean to be respectful, but if Mom wakes up tomorrow and can't remember what day it is, we've checked the box, boxes, and we're ready to go. And we know that if or when this happens, somebody will be able to take over for them.
Your scenario you just hit on, I want to just pause for a moment on, because you're talking about a situation where maybe one of the parents has passed away, unfortunately. Money is fine, but you're saying that there's not access to the money to provide for the other parent should they need a nicer nursing home. Like, the money is there. So I think a lot of people might be in that boat where they think, well, if one parent passes away, it's okay. It all transfers to the other and we're going to be just A-okay. You're saying that's not always the case.
That's absolutely the case. If Mom is of mental competence and she can make her decisions, God bless, and everything's awesome. The problem is when that person can't.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? And then we have to sort of scramble and figure out how to fix things. And if we spend, a couple hours on the front end and a few bucks to put everything in place, Mom has peace of mind. She doesn't have to worry. Kids have peace of mind because they know that if the event happens, both A, what Mom's directions are, B, how we're going to pay for it, and then who's going to make the decisions.
All right. We're going to do another segment. I want you to, just in case someone's running out of the car or something, how can people reach out to you? Because that, I think, is going to ping for a lot of people.
Sure. The office phone is simple, 630-568-6656. And the office webpage, which has a dedicated intake, is Camden, CamdenLawOffice.com.
And in radio, we're told to do the number twice. 630-568-6656.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Okay. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll have plenty more here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. All right, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Picking up our conversation with Kevin Camden and Camden Law, 630-568-6656. You know, sometimes, Kevin, there are uncomfortable conversations to have, but they're important ones to have, and it gives you so much peace of mind, like the scenario you were just laying out beforehand, too. Let's get to a question. We got a caller from Jim. Jim, you got a question here for Kevin. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually doing my spring cleaning, the thing you do every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a will in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I did a trust in 2019. Do I need to do something to cancel the will?
A will in 2016, a trust in 2019.
Not necessarily, correct, Jim. I'll give you the standard lawyer caveat. Without looking at the documents, it's hard for me to say. My biggest concern is that there's a conflict between the trust and the will, which creates a problem once you pass away. My preference, and typically the way we do them in the office, is recommend a pour-over will with a trust, and essentially that says everything you own, according to the will, gets dumped into your trust, and then your trustee disposes of everything. If it's still set up that way, even though the trust was a couple of years later, or if the trust mirrors whatever the inheritance provisions are in the will, I'm okay with it. If they don't and there's some conflict, I would recommend you tighten it up and look at amending the will so that it's consistent with the trust.
Okay. How do you amend a will with a lawyer who created it that's no longer alive?
That's easy. You can come see any lawyer, bring the original docs or at least copies with us. And typically, when you add what's big dollar legal terms here, codicils or amendments to a will, we will indicate that the prior will with respect to these provisions is no longer valid, and we wish to substitute these paragraphs or these provisions.
Okay, and you guys can do that?
We do.
Look at that.
I'll be calling you next week.
All right.
Very well. Thank you.
630-568-6656. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate the phone call. Yeah. And I imagine that's fairly common for people, right? That happens.
We do. We often, again, it's the human condition. We don't all live forever, right? And mm-hmm. folks pass away, and the fortunate lawyers get to retire, and folks don't know where to go. So we often pick up old documents and update them. Not an issue.
773 texted in with Camden Law Offices. How much is a basic package for creating an estate plan? The will, the power, the attorney, et cetera. I know that's a very broad question. Can you help out folks a little bit and understand that?
We can. Our preference in the office is to do a revocable trust and a pour-over will.
What does that mean?
Will.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. For purposes of estate planning, you can have a revocable trust, which means you can change it as you see fit. Or if we want to get into more sophisticated Medicare or asset protection trusts, we get into irrevocable trusts. And there are benefits and burdens to both. For most folks, if they're not at a time where they're worried about moving into extended care, or if they have concerns about Medicare recapture, revocable trusts are going to do exactly what you want. Our package includes the trust, powers of attorney for the husband and wife. We will convey one property into the trust, which I think is hugely significant, and we'll loop back to that. Abstract of trust, anything that anybody would need relative to your estate plan, we put together, and our fee for that is $2,500.
Okay. And that could save you a lot of hassle and money in the long run. Let's zoom out even further. And just in case someone is a little lost, trust, will, basic definitions of kind of both.
So the benefit of a trust, regardless of what kind, is when you pass away, you get to avoid probate court, you get to avoid any public filing of a will, and it allows for your successor trustee to act in the capacity of the trustee and do whatever. So the classic example would be dad passes away and there's a trust, mom becomes the successor trustee, everything dad owns passes to mom. mom passes away and the oldest child now becomes a successor trustee, that successor trustee gets to wrap up all the affairs of the estate, including, and I know this will be a bit of a spoiler alert, I see it all the time, mom and dad, kids don't want the house they grow up in.
Mm-hmm.
They want the money from the house that they grew up in, but they don't necessarily want the house.
Well, they moved away. I mean, there's many reasons.
And it's awesome because with a trust, we avoid the statutory six-month period of probate. It allows folks to move more quickly, dispose of assets, clean up bank accounts, do all of these sorts of things that happen by operation of the instrument instead of waiting for approval in the court and to go through the probate process.
Do people feel, I mean, it's inherent in the name trust. Is there sometimes concern that, hey, I want to write this all out and spell out every little thing and I don't trust anyone to take this over for me?
The example we use, John, is the trust is, to a degree, you could look at it like a present, but we use the example of a box. And when the trust maker passes away, you open up the box, and the very first thing in the top of the box is a sheet of instructions, which is the trust. And it says, A, B, C, D, here's what to do with all of my stuff, which makes it very, very easy for the trustee. I don't like mistakes or surprises. We certainly don't like mistakes, but we don't like surprises for folks that are acting as trustees, power of attorney, and we counsel our clients all the time. You need to talk to these folks because you don't want to pass away and then have somebody say, yeah, I'm not comfortable doing that. Now, we build in protections, but typically that first successor trustee is somebody, oftentimes a spouse, the surviving spouse, or children, and you want them to be comfortable with what they're doing.
So even if I'm really sorry for these basic questions, but I'm sure someone else has them. At least I hope they do. So if someone is concerned that a trust is going to just give someone else the power to do everything, you can still outline what you want to have happen to certain things, and the trustee will be obligated to do a lot of that.
Correct. And the trustee has obligations. They have to act as a fiduciary of the trust, which essentially means they have to do A, what the trust provides for, and B, act consistent with the trust. They can't just go rogue and decide that, you know, all of the funds that were in the trust are now going to be theirs, and they're going to go buy a new boat and be out on the lake on a great day like today.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That's also good to know. When we were talking about difficult conversations, do you recommend someone have all these difficult conversations with people before they even come to you? Or can you help someone determine what those conversations need to be with other people? At what stage should people call you and come to you?
We can go either way with it. We have clients that come in and say, you know, we've already looked at all of this. We know who we want to be powers of attorney. We want to know who successor trustees are. If we have children, we know who wants to be guardian and all of these sorts of things. Typically, if somebody calls and says, I'd like to put an estate plan together, we have about a 15-page questionnaire that we send out. We ask folks to start filling it out for us, return it to us, and then we'll set up a consultation where we can walk through everything, make sure, A, folks understand, and B, that we've got everything put together. I'm also a huge fan of this for, last time we were together, we talked about real estate. A lot of my investor clients have properties that we funnel into trusts for purposes of maintaining them for the benefit of the family. So we can talk about the nuances of, well, who gets properties, or if we own stock, or if I own my own LLC, who gets these sort of things. Mm-hmm. So we can bring those small businesses in, and a lot of small business owners often neglect this. Not intentionally, of course, they're just not aware of it. Business is great. You own it yourself, or you may own it with your spouse, and you have no succession plans. And sadly, estate planning and probate looks an awful lot like divorce when there's a lot of money left after mom and dad pass away, if it's not squared away the right way.
Right. I'm glad that you guys have that like questionnaire. I think a lot of people are frozen because they don't know where to begin, and it's nice to know that you can help take those first steps. Kevin, we're out of time. 630-568-6656. What's the website people can go to as well?
CamdenLawOffice.com. CamdenLawOfficeSingular.com.
We'll talk again soon, my friend, okay?
Thanks, John. Good to see you.